everybody. Welcome to Viewing Angles, the only movie podcast that is starring me, your host, Dan Leone. With me, as always, is the other host,
Robert Mecki.
Yeah. The only movie podcast with these two guys.
Yeah. You could take that to the bank
and cash it. That and a nickel will get you 5 cents.
All right. Just
yeah. This week, the big movie is Ad Astra, the Brad Pitt extravaganza, space opera, epic, odyssey, et cetera, et cetera. We'll be talking about that later in the show, but let's get to the box office, which is a surprising week.
Truly.
Because Downton Abbey, the movie, which A, exists and came out, and B, won the box office. It came in at $31 million, which I'm very surprised.
Yeah.
I feel like.
So surprised. I didn't realize, like, this is a franchise I'd always heard being talked about in the background of, you know, like hospital waiting rooms. I didn't know people actually watched the show or would go to a theater to see this film. So I'm guessing that is this like the end? Is this the capstone to the entire
Ends in a murder suicide. Yeah.
Of the queen. Okay.
I have honestly no idea. I have no idea what Downton Abbey's about. I don't know anything besides Maggie Smith and Dan Stevens are in it.
I didn't even know Dan Stevens was in it.
Yeah, I think that's how you got to start.
Wow.
But yeah, I don't really know anything about it other than all of the older women in my life have seen it, I think.
It's got a super hot soundtrack. Like Downton Abbey theme, fantastic.
It's not like techno, right? It's not like the Nick where it's like old. Old setting, but like
no, it is not. But now that you mention it, I am absolutely going to look up a dubstep remix of the Downton Abbey theme as soon as we finish recording, because
hell yeah,
now I need to hear that. But yeah, I remember just seeing the trailer for this movie and I kind of want to see it. I have no connection to this franchise at all, probably have no idea what's going on in the movie, but that is a hype trailer.
What could be going on? I haven't even seen the trailer, so maybe I need to look at it. What is the driving force?
The king and queen are coming to England. I mean, the king and queen are coming to Downton Abbey.
They're in England. Okay, that's cool, I guess, right?
I still don't know what Downton Abbey is. I'm guessing that it's like a rich estate.
Yeah, it's like Buckingham. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, something. I don't know a whole lot about estate. How British people live.
There's an Earl, I'm sure.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that made $31 million, which I'm sure is enough to pay for 6 more seasons of Downton Abbey.
Yes, absolutely. I will say, I thought it was kind of funny, too. I went to go see Ad Astra this weekend at the Draft House, and it was packed. Like, I've never seen the parking. Like, people were parking in non-parking spots. It looked like the release of, like, a Star Wars movie. And I was wondering, like, what is everyone here to see? I thought it was either Ad Astra or, like, God forbid, Rambo. But it turns out it was Downton Abbey. Like,
wow,
Downton Abbey
wild.
Has a rabid fan base.
Yeah. Jeez. I mean, I guess you have to see it. I wonder if it'll be a similar thing for the Sopranos movie, The Many Saints of Newark.
Ooh, I wonder. That'll be an interesting matchup to see if The Many Saints of Newark makes more than Downton Abbey.
Yeah, I'm sure that will be what it's compared to.
Yeah.
The big question, I guess, because I feel like Downton Abbey stopped more recently than The Sopranos.
Yeah,
I think
Sopranos Downton
ended like 2004, 2006, maybe.
Yeah.
Somewhere around there. And Downton Abbey, I feel like just a few years ago.
I thought Downton Abbey was still running when I first saw this trailer.
Yeah, do you think they're going to bring it back now?
This is the finale. Probably. I mean, this is good money. I don't think they want to just let that go.
Yeah, Downton Abbey. Let's see. It's 2 hours long, fun, but it's on PBS. Yeah, let's see. It's how many seasons did this go for?
Like six, I'm guessing.
Yeah, six seasons.
Nailed it.
52 episodes, and it stopped in 2015.
Okay. Yeah, so I guess there is hype. I wonder if. I really wonder, the thing about Many Saints of Newark is I wonder how well, like, are people going to be able to connect this movie to The Sopranos?
I feel like they will, especially because they got Gandolfini's kid in it.
Yeah.
Michael.
But I feel like if you're not paying attention to it, like Downton Abbey, the fact that the movie's just called Downton Abbey, you can just be like, oh, it's I want to go see Downton Abbey, the movie. But The Many Saints of Newark, it's not, you know, it's not Sopranos, the movie.
The Many Sopranos of Sopranos.
Yeah, it's not Sopranos Origins or something like.
Yeah, Tony Soprano, young Tony Soprano.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder how they're going to draw
Sopranos
that connection.
Sopranos Origins, Tony Soprano. Yeah. They go the fucking X-Men Origins route.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That, I mean, hey, I don't know. I'm not the in charge of marketing for these movies. I assume that since the title's already been announced, mm-hmm. maybe they'll do like a byline, like The Sopranos, The Many Saints of Newark. Right?
Oh, could be. Yeah. It'd be kind of weird too.
The Many Saints of Newark is also a great fucking title for a movie.
Oh, yeah. Great. I honestly, but the thing is, when you told me about this movie, I'd heard the title of this film. I did not know that it was a Sopranos prequel.
Yeah. I wonder how much it'll have to do with like, with The Sopranos. Like,
I mean, it's got Tony.
Yeah, it's got young Tony, but it's not about him. It's about his uncle. It's about Christopher's dad, I think. Dickie Montesalto.
Oh, Dickie Soprano.
Montesalto. I don't know. It's Italian.
Dickie Soprano.
Dickie Montesani?
Yeah. Dickie Tony.
Like Dickie Tony. So, yeah. Anyway. Cool. I'm ready. I'm ready to see Downton Abbey with no pretext.
That's a movie you want to get shit faced for. You want to laugh at all the highbrow British humor.
Right. Yeah. It's got to be a fun movie. All the poshness. But that's why people watch the show. Right.
Yeah. I would think so. There's got to be something. It can't be that dry.
Right. Well, I don't know. I bet it is that dry. Yeah.
We'll never
I bet
know.
It's somehow even drier than you would imagine. Anyway, let's move on to the next. It jumps pretty significantly down from there. But we've got Ad Astra and Rambo fighting it out for 2 and 3, respectively. Ad Astra at 19 mil. Rambo, like $200,000 behind it at 18.8.
Which is very sad. This is a sad state for the box office to be in.
Yeah, it's weird that, I mean, it's cool that you have one original movie and one, I don't know. Yeah, I take it back. 3 new movies came out, all from different studios this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually like it's a decent box office. What is this like? Because I think the next like 3 are also like similar budget lines. So,
I wonder how this compares to this weekend last year. Like, what's the year over year box office performance look like?
Is that a thing we can look at?
Probably take a little bit to pull it up. I don't know if I want to take the time out to do that, but
oh man, last year, yeah, I can do it right here. Holy shit! Yeah, wow. Wait, yes. Oh, it actually did. Yeah, it did way better. Last year it was The House with a Clock in Its Walls, that Jack Black movie.
Yep.
At 26 million, and then A Simple Favor at 10 million, and then The Nun at 9.9 million. So
good. Okay.
It did much better, much better.
So we saw an improvement. Okay, so this brings up my next question. Do you think this was a good time frame to release Ad Astra?
Yes.
You don't think it would have done better in like a slot maybe closer to award season, considering all the critical buzz it's been getting?
No, because I think this movie might ultimately get ignored by the Academy because it's about space.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking with a friend of the show, Elmer, after we saw this movie. But I do have a feeling that this is going to be 2019's Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah, and I mean, which is upsetting. And obviously, we can't say too much on it because it hasn't happened yet. But it feels like it'll be a movie that's like right at the end of the summer, right at the beginning of the fall, mm-hmm. that just kind of goes under the radar. Hopefully it gets some recognition. Maybe it'll get a little bit of more of a boost towards award season. But I mean, right now it is like one of the best movies of the year. I think it caps off a pretty lackluster summer. Like Brad Pitt was in both of the amazing movies this summer.
Yeah. This is the year of Pitt.
Yeah. The Brad Pittissance.
Man,
yeah.
I wonder what studio projections for this movie were, because this is a $100 million movie.
Yeah, which is, who keeps giving James Gray money? Because he's never made money.
I don't know, but he either has like an amazing pitch, a great agent. But my theory as to how Ad Astra Because, like, so The Lost City of Z, that's, like, that movie cost money, but it only cost $30 million. How do you go from $30 million to $100 million? And I swear to God, I hope it's that the Fox executives saw the writing on the wall with the Disney acquisition and were like, of course we can give you $100 million to make a deeply personal, non-action space movie starring Brad Pitt.
Well, I'm sure Brad Pitt probably helped. The fact that Brad Pitt is in this movie definitely helps.
Oh, yeah.
And then it's Brad Pitt's production company. So this is Fox as a distributor. They're not like, it's not the production company.
Oh, this. Oh, I thought Fox was the production company.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's cool. Shout out to Brad Pitt.
I think it really. Yeah. Brad Pitt is just like, let's make a cool movie, dude.
Dude, hell yes. I'm going to keep giving Brad Pitt money. I don't care what movie he's in.
Yeah, he's a great producer. I mean, he already has Oscars for producing.
Yeah. Man, that makes me so happy. I'm glad that he can probably just look at these losses and be like, eh, well.
Right. It's just a tax write-off anyway.
Made this, an amazing movie. Yeah.
There's no way this movie ever makes money. But worldwide, I mean, it made more money overseas than it did domestically. It made $26 million overseas.
So its total gross is still only like $46 million.
Right. So it's about halfway there.
So it's not going to break even.
Who knows?
Especially including marketing.
Right. Yeah. James Gray movies don't break even, I guess. But I mean, I'm surprised this movie is PG-13, too. I feel like
I forgot about that. I remember the first thing I thought of after I got out of that movie was like, one, how many times did they say fuck? I think it said fuck once. And then I was like,
right, I can't remember.
Oh, this
really
is like a PG-13 movie then.
Yeah. And there's some violence in it. There's some pretty disturbing violence, actually. Like, yeah, I was surprised at PG-13.
Same. Like, this is a hard PG-13.
Very hard. All right. Let's move down to the good, bad, and the toss-ups of this sweet, sweet
We didn't
week.
Even talk about the number three.
Oh, shit. Rambo Last Blood, which Rob saw. Do you think it deserved $18 million?
No, absolutely not. But it's the biggest hard R of the weekend. If you have a subscription to a movie theater, I say go check it out because it is hilarious.
Is it as racist as it looks?
It's pretty racist.
Yeah.
But, you know, I saw it with a Mexican and he was pretty cool with it. So,
yeah, but he also loves the Dodgers. So you can't take anything that he says.
Yeah, he's got a fucked up racial identity.
He's fucked up. Yeah. Oh, geez. Baseball. Gotta love it. Well, yeah. Rambo Last Blood. It's making about the same amount of money that the other Rambo made.
This probably has a better chance of breaking even. Budget $50 million. Doesn't seem like it. This feels like a movie that could have been made for like $10 million. So yeah. I'm guessing at least half of that $50 million went to Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah, I wonder if this is going to make... he did so many things in the movie.
Yeah.
He like wrote it, story by credit. Did he direct it too?
No. If he directed it, it might have been at least like pretty fun. Instead of just the last 20 minutes being fun. Because Rambo 2008, I'll stand by this, is a great film.
You just got to get to Burma.
It actually has something to say, too. The only thing this one has to say is don't trust Mexicans.
I'm glad he went full racist in his old man.
Yeah, he knew exactly what audience he wanted to play to.
Like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, man.
How did this franchise go from... a cautionary tale about a man suffering from intense PTSD after the Vietnam War to old crotchety man takes on cartels.
It's because subtlety is lost on a mass audience.
Sure. Ad Astra is not very subtle. But
also Ad Astra is not making near, like, nobody's going to remember Ad Astra the same way they remember Rambo.
True, I guess.
Like, people saw Sylvester Stallone back in... When did Rambo come out? Like, was that 70s or 80s?
Probably, like, early 80s.
Yeah, they just saw him, and they were like, fuck yeah, dude. He's a one-man army. They didn't get any of the subtext. Not even subtext. Just, like, the literal point of the movie.
I mean, I don't know how you can, like, get around the point of the movie. It's pretty, pretty up in your face.
Because
they're
Vietnam
boy.
Yeah,
you just remember him
being shirtless and muscle bound and blowing things up.
I don't think he's ever shirtless in the first
without
movie.
Without any backup.
Besides when they hose him down. And that's when he goes, like, has his first flashback to Vietnam.
I thought he was shirtless. I thought he was shirtless towards the end, too. Is he not shirtless in the
police station or wherever he is?
Not the police station. Like, he's in, like, the store. The yeah. hardware store. I thought he was shirtless there.
I think he's all like torn up. I think he gets like shirtless. That's I think out around like Rambo 3. Yeah. Rambo 3 is when he's like firing a machine, like a heavy machine gun.
Yeah, Rambo 3 is when he fights the Russians. Rambo 2 is just the Vietnam War 2.0 because they realize they can win it with Rambo.
Yeah. It's like Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah. And then Rambo 4, he's just in Burma. He's like, yeah, I'm in a Vietnam adjacent country now.
Yeah, wild.
I guess Myanmar, but, you know, whatever. Southeast Asian politics.
Shit's tough, dude.
Yeah.
Well, that's enough Rambo talk, I guess. Let's get into something good that happened this week.
Let's get real high with the news.
So we've got our high is the Uncut Gems trailer, which is the newest movie from the Safdie brothers, Benny and the other one. And it's starring Adam Sandler and a bunch of other people. It's got like a crazy cast, but Adam Sandler's the main thing. And if you didn't see Good Time, definitely go. I think it's on Amazon Prime right now.
It is.
Go watch it. Very tense, very great performance by Robert Pattinson. And it's pretty quick. It's like an hour and a half.
Oh, yeah. That movie has momentum.
Yeah. And I've heard similar things about this movie. It's
yeah.
Just
this
a lot of momentum.
Better reviews.
Yeah.
Like, it's got like a 90 on Metacritic right now.
It's bonkers. So it's got Adam Sandler. It's got Lakeith Stanfield. Kevin Garnett apparently plays a big role in this movie. The Weeknd is in this movie as himself.
Yeah.
Which
Idina,
is wild.
Idina Menzel.
Yeah. She plays maybe Adam Sandler's wife or something.
Yeah. Wife, ex-girlfriend, current girlfriend, maybe.
Something like that. So
yeah.
There are people in this movie. It looks real good. It looks very frenetic. I am so excited to see it. It doesn't come out till December, which is a bummer, but we can tide ourselves over by just watching this trailer over and over again.
Yeah. I've watched the trailer 3 times today. It's
me too.
So good.
I'm so ready for it. But
man, do you think he's going to get an Oscar, any Oscar attention for this role?
Just give it to him.
Please.
Like
I want to give him positive reinforcement so he keeps taking roles like this. Like, let him work with Paul Thomas Anderson again.
Yeah, I don't think he gives a shit. Like, I think he does this because it's fun. And I think everyone knows that he's a good actor.
Yeah.
So they just like, I think he can do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
I think if he wanted to do like only drama, he could do only drama.
Oh, he very easily could. I just hope that he gets to a stage in his life where he's like, all right, I'm done fucking around making grown-ups movies. I kind of want to like work again. Because I know
I think he likes doing funny voices too much.
Well, that too. I want him to make the sequel to 8 Crazy Nights.
Nine Crazy Nights?
9 Crazy Nights, yeah. What I do love about all the marketing for this film too, especially even like in the posters, they are coasting solely on the fact that Adam Sandler is in a good movie again.
Oh, yeah.
Like the marketing
That's
doesn't
enough to
give,
get people going.
Yeah, because it doesn't give anything away about what this movie actually is or what it's about. It's just like, hey, we got Adam Sandler to act again.
Yeah. And it's about basketball and betting
and gems
and gems. Yeah, he's a jewelry guy.
Yeah.
I'm into it. I'm all in.
So in.
Yeah. But you know what I'm not into?
The Princess Bride remake news that has been swirling about Hollywood.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that. So earlier this week, it was not announced, but it was kind of floated that a lot of people have been talking about, like in the industry, remaking The Princess Bride.
Yeah.
Like a lot of like A-list people
Movie done. That's a Disney property, too, isn't it?
I don't think it is, because I think I don't know, because it's William Goldman wrote the book and the screenplay. So it's completely like original outside of the Disney canon. I'm just it's such a perfect movie. It'd be like, to me, it's almost like remaking The Godfather. It's just like, what?
Yeah.
What
how could
you
possibly
hope
improve?
To accomplish?
Man. OK, here's a question I pose, because I think everybody agrees with you, except for the people with the money. But
right.
If this is inevitable, how would you make it, like, what's the best case scenario?
The best case scenario is you like completely remake it. No, I don't like, what are you gonna do? Like,
set it in the future.
Make it make them space.
The,
yeah.
The Princess Bride 2049.
Right. The Princess Bride is actually about Buttercup becoming queen. And like, yeah, I'm like, how do you solve the main problem, which is you can't find actors who can perform those roles better. Yeah. You can't change the plot in any way to make it better. Like, you have to do a direct reboot. You got to do everything the same and then also make it better somehow. I just don't see
impossible. Yeah.
Animated. Maybe you do it with claymation, stop motion animation. Yeah,
sure.
All right. I'll bite. Maybe that's the only possible way. Like, do it a completely different visual medium.
Could be pretty fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not what's going to happen, though.
Definitely not. No, it's going to be, or do like a hard R version.
I was going to say, give me like fucking just let Zack Snyder direct the remake.
Right. Well, apparently, and I haven't read the book, but apparently the movie is like a meta text on the book where it's like, because apparently the book is a little bit more fucked up.
Really?
Yeah. But like the movie is the grandpa reading the actual book to Fred Savage. but like clean it up a little bit. Like at the end, I think like everyone dies. Like it's very depressing.
Really?
Yeah.
Now you got me curious to read the book. Hell yeah, dude. Give me like a hard R accurate to the source material version of this movie. If you're going to if you're going to remake it, make it stand out.
Yeah, because it's going to be awful, like no matter what. So why?
Yeah, at least make it awful and fun.
Yeah, make it a choose your own adventure.
Yeah. Let Netflix remake it. Fucking Princess Bride Bandersnatch.
Oh, God, kill me now. Well, so that's our low. And then, Rob, what's our little toss up here? It's some casting news.
Yeah, we got some casting news.
I think you're more
news.
Tossed up about it than I am.
I'm just curious because I do think it is a toss up. But so the news came out this week that Jonah Hill is in final talks to be in Matt Reeves' Batman movie. I don't know if it's a reboot or if it's a standalone thing. They haven't really been that open about where it lands in the DC universe.
If that even exists anymore.
Yeah, that's also a good question. But I mean, they're still making Harley Quinn movies and they're making a Suicide Squad with like returning characters from the first one. So.
Right. But I think they're just going to completely ignore any like ties to a larger universe.
I mean, honestly, I'd be pretty fine with that, too. But yeah, so we got Jonah Hill probably playing the villain in The Batman. Everybody's thinking he's going to be playing Penguin, also known as Oswald Cobblepot, which I think would be a great choice. I think that'd be fun. But I want to see him play Calendar Man.
Nobody gives a shit about Calendar Man.
Dude,
nobody.
I'm telling you, this movie is going to be an adaptation of The Long Halloween because Matt Reeves keeps saying this movie is not about how good of a fighter Batman is. It's about how good of a detective he is. And The Long Halloween is the ultimate Batman detective story. Because he doesn't, he never beats the shit out of Calendar Man. Calendar Man's, he's already in prison the entire story.
I don't know. I think because he said there's going to have the whole like murderer's row, like the whole rogues gallery of Batman villains.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's going to be more. I think it's going to involve Arkham to a certain point, right? Isn't that what we think? Like,
yeah.
How is he going to interact with so many villains in a way that doesn't seem contrived?
I think it's going to be, because I bet you all those villains are going to be in Arkham anyway. I don't think he's actually going to be fighting them. And if they're doing The Long Halloween, like, he's going to Arkham regularly to talk with Calendar Man. They're like, hey, the fuck you planning, bitch?
I would love to hear the Batman talk to a guy who looks like a calendar.
Yeah, because that's what
because in this universe, Calendar Man looks like a calendar.
Literal Calendar Man.
Yeah, a literal calendar. I'm telling you, I could fucking make this movie. What are you planning? What are you planning? So the rumor is that they don't know who, like, they're in talks to figure out who he is playing. because they don't know yet, which kind of has me worried that Matt Reeves doesn't have this all written out, that he doesn't kind of know what's going on.
I don't know. I think
like,
they know.
We can kind of like make it whoever you want. Like, when is this movie supposed to come out?
So you think they're casting Jonah Hill before they even know who he's playing?
That's what they're in talks with now. They're trying to figure out like who he should be playing. And apparently it's up between the Penguin and the Riddler. Those are like the two.
To me, that's always just like that's what all the fans have been clamoring for.
This is the trades. This is the trades. This is what they're reporting, man, inside the deals.
The trades can be wrong. Reporters are not infallible.
True. Yeah. But Robert Pattinson's name did get floated. I feel like it's been mildly transparent. This casting process, especially we got Jeffrey Wright like getting cast as a possible Gordon.
Oh, that's confirmed.
Yeah. Okay. So that's confirmed.
Yeah. Which I'm very happy about that. Jeffrey Wright. I think he'll
be a good one.
Although this is definitely confirmation that this is not part of the existing DC universe, because
true,
J.K. Simmons played Commissioner Gordon in Justice League.
Right. But now he's back to being J. Jonah Jameson.
Yeah, exactly. We got a bunch of universe swapping going around.
Yeah. I think this is mainly a toss up because it makes it seem like they don't know what the story is yet. And maybe he's just keeping it real open ended. But that also makes me think that it might be like a situation where he can kind of take characters and move them around kind of seamlessly, which makes me think that it's something set like in Arkham or some kind of closed scenario. Like, someone's taking over. Something's been going on in Arkham. They've been killing villains, maybe. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, if it's just a fucking Arkham set contained story, I'm down for that. Give me Dread, but with Batman in Arkham Asylum.
Yeah.
That sounds awesome. But I'm telling you, I swear, it's going to be a lot more detective work heavy. Like, it's going to be a noir mystery more so than any other Batman film we've seen in the past.
Right. I wonder if they're going to take a lot from Serious House on Serious Hill.
Oh, a Serious House on Serious Earth. I would love to see that, but that's definitely more of like there's barely any detective work going on in that comic book. That's just
right,
straight
but it's
up
so loose
horror.
Yeah. But I feel like that, like the way that comic is drawn and the like the story is loose enough that you can kind of make it into whatever you want it to be.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of like weird things that are up for interpretation in that comic.
Yeah. If they do that though, I want the backstory to the art in that book is fantastic. And Grant Morrison is my favorite comic writer, just because of how batshit insane he's willing to get. And also he wrote a lot of his work on ayahuasca, which I'm a big fan of.
The fact that he did it or ayahuasca itself?
Both.
Gotcha. Well, that's all of our highs, lows and toss ups of the week. But the main course here is the new Brad Pitt, James Gray.
The Pizza
Space
Resistance.
Odyssey, Ad Astra. In Latin, meaning to the stars, a part of a phrase that means through adversity to the stars.
Yeah. Lorem ipsum to the stars.
Lorem ipsum, motherfuckers. Hell yeah. And where am I going with this? Yeah. So what else is this? It's a movie starring Brad Pitt, Tommy Lee Jones,
and
Liv
Toxic
Tyler,
Masculinity.
Yeah. Toxic Masculinity. Ruth Negga is in it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Those are the main people.
So did you
know Donald Sutherland is in it?
Oh yes, he was for a tidbit.
Yeah, for a brief moment. So this movie is about these strange things that are happening called surges, where just like huge power outages are going on.
Yeah,
electricity is being fucked with, and they've traced it to a deep space project that Brad Pitt's dad was on, that lost contact a long time ago. Everyone thought he was dead, and they're like, hey, he's probably alive and he might be causing this, so go find him and blow up the space station.
Yeah.
And Brad Pitt's like, sure,
of course.
This movie, initial thoughts, this movie's good. This movie's really good. It's probably one of the best of the year that I've seen.
Same.
It's got a lot of good things going on. It's entertaining. It's impactful in its emotional arcs. It succeeds, I think, in getting across what it wants to get across without ever getting really boring. It may be a little like not whatever the opposite of subtle is, a little too on the nose, but I can look past a lot of that. And I just really enjoyed this movie. What about you, Rob?
Yeah, I felt the same way. I didn't really know what to expect going in this film, but the bar was set pretty high because a lot of the reviews I've been reading around the internet were glowing.
Yeah. Have you seen any of other other James Gray movie?
I have not. I've been meaning to watch The Lost City of Z for forever. I've heard We Own the Night is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't actually know much about what his filmography looks like.
Yeah, I've only seen The Lost City of Z, which is really good. I would highly recommend. It's on Amazon Prime. It's a very good period piece. Charlie Hunnam's great. Robert Pattinson is in it. Yeah, Robert Pattinson is super good in it. He plays like an alcoholic, science explorer.
Weren't they all?
Yeah. So he's great in it. But this movie kind of expands on how, you know, the themes, there are masculine themes in The Lost City of Z, but it's a lot about fathers and sons.
Yeah.
And a father taking on a huge work at the expense of their family and kind of roping their children into it to an extent.
Are you talking about Lost City of Z or Ad Astra?
Correct. I'm talking about the similarities between the two.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, some of the good things in Astra is Brad Pitt. Holy shit. Like, great job. Like, and initially everyone was saying, oh, he's doing so great.
Yeah.
And for the first, like, maybe like half of that, like maybe half an hour, 45. I'm like, yeah, he's fine. Fine. And he really kicked it up a notch. Like,
oh, yeah.
Throughout the rest. He has some pretty key emotional scenes that play very strongly. And I was very just captivated by watching his face the entire time.
He's a real actor. James Gray uses a bunch of close-ups in this film because he clearly has faith in, you know, his actor's performances, especially Brad Pitt's face. Oh boy, just watching those wrinkles move up and down.
Yeah, it definitely highlights the loneliness that this person is feeling. Throughout the movie, Brad Pitt has to complete these automated psych evals where a computer kind of asks him, like, how's he doing? And he explains, and one of the big things they say about him is that, like, hey, you fell off this like space tower and you were in this like free fall spin and your heart never got above 80 beats per minute.
Mm-hmm.
You're crazy. This guy is like,
man, I wish I could do that.
Stone cold cool. yeah, sure. So, I mean, so you got Brad Pitt firing on all cylinders, doing like the movie star thing. Love it. Everyone else is pretty good, like acting wise too. I don't think there's anyone who's really bad. Maybe some of the people on that doomed space crew to Neptune.
Oh yeah, that felt kind of weird, a little bit cheesy. But also, I don't think anybody, like, it wasn't that distracting. But I also don't think nobody else really had the screen time to shine like Brad Pitt does. I think Tommy Lee Jones, for what we saw of him, was great. I think as usual. Donald Sutherland was also pretty good. I just don't think we had enough time with these characters to really absorb what their performances offered.
Yeah. Who's the best like supporting character in this? What's the best supporting performance in this movie?
Oh, man. Honestly, probably not Liv Tyler.
No, not Liv Tyler, who apparently was added in during reshoots. Like,
yeah,
that whole thing didn't exist.
Yeah, I believe that. That was just a bunch of flashbacks that they edited in.
Right. At the very beginning, I'm like, whoa, is Liv Tyler playing the wife?
Yeah.
Like, they got to bring her back, right? Yeah. Like, they can't just have her playing the one scene. They bring her back.
Yeah. I do think Tommy Lee Jones is probably my favorite performance other than Brad Pitt. I think he was great. I wish we got more of him. But
yeah, he was great.
He was in the movie. As soon as they put picture. Yeah, because I'd seen like one trailer for this film. And I don't think they showed him in it. But I remember as soon as they put the picture of Tommy Lee Jones down, I was like, oh, OK, so he's the heart of darkness. OK,
yeah, he's got to be important.
Yeah,
I think Ruth Negga was actually really good in this movie. I also like Ruth Negga a lot.
Oh,
I feel
me
like
too.
She hasn't got a whole lot.
That's why you should watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Is she in that?
Yeah, she's in like she's the main villain of like the first three seasons.
Oh, Jesus Christ. They have one villain for three seasons.
Oh, there's stuff.
I'll reiterate. I'll never watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, my God.
It is. Sometimes we all love things that just like it's like the Americans. Like, no one's going to go back and watch The Americans. Like, if you missed it, you missed it. I will watch
The Americans.
Sure, yeah, I'll see you in 10 years.
Yeah, so here's the thing. I will watch all these movies as soon as I, like, you know, when I don't have to go into work anymore. I'll just watch all the, I'll just watch all the shit that's been on my list forever.
For sure, for sure, for sure. I'll, yeah, maybe.
That's all I'm asking.
That's all I'm asking is to never have to work again so I can just watch content. I still think they should stop making content for a few years. Just let us all get caught up.
Yeah. Just like take all the money you would have spent on content, put it on marketing towards old content. Refresh that shit.
No, just, you know, like cure cancer. Like just take all that Hollywood money, just cure cancer or AIDS or
if they cure cancer, though, like they would lose out on so much Oscar bait. You know?
True. I mean, I think the times have come and gone for cancer movies. I think we're over it.
Think about how Book of Henry would have played if they had a cure for cancer.
that kid would have had to kill that exactly. molesting father.
It would have been Jesus so much Christ. It actually would have been a lot better.
It would have been better if the mom got cancer. That would have been a wild. But this kid had to be, oh man, what a weird fucking movie.
Yeah. Can we think about that all night now?
Yeah, I hate it. Another great thing about this movie, the score.
Yes, banging, I like the score.
Banging score.
Score is great. I think the visuals were astounding. And just the way that he plays with color, especially light and shadow. Like, there were so many shots in this film that I'm just like, this is beautiful and haunting. I loved the moon, like the Mad Max moon chase.
Oh god, yeah, that's coming up in my, like, just there's a bunch of set pieces like in this. Yeah,
that was great. And just seeing how it ends with him driving into the shadow of like the dark side of the moon. And then everything on Mars, like those hallways with like the shifting lights.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Very, very cool. Loved the way that they played with color in this. It looked great. Hoyt Van Hoytema was the director photography, who is fantastic.
Yeah.
He's probably one of my favorites. He did, you know, Dunkirk, Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. Like, he's done so many great things.
Hoyt.
He's really fantastic.
Yeah, shout out to Hoyt.
Hoyt. Another great thing about this movie, it has amazing set pieces for a very thoughtful movie.
Mm-hmm.
There are some genuinely tense and thrilling sequences. I'm thinking the space elevator fall.
Oh, yeah.
Is a huge one early on.
So here's a hot take I'm about to spew all over you.
spew away.
I think that elevator, the space antenna free fall sequence looked better than Fallout's skydiving sequence.
I was definitely getting a similar vibe, and just it had the perfect balance of making me feel like I was having a bad time,
yeah,
but not going over the edge of like making me nauseous.
Yeah,
just like whoa.
Also,
like teetering on the edge.
What I liked about it is that they didn't like it's. It looks like they got someone to actually free fall, but
yeah,
they used the natural lighting of the scene, and they didn't like CG in a thunderstorm below him. So it actually looks like, oh, that ground below him is actually the ground. It's not like a CG cloud with lightning running through it, which is my biggest problem with Fallout. Like, this just looks like they actually got someone to fall off of a tall building and record him as he fell.
Yeah, it does look very realistic in that way. It doesn't look like a green screen. It looks like a guy actually falling. I'm not sure how they accomplished this feat. I would love to see the behind the scenes.
Yeah.
But it's effective no matter what. It's the fact that we can't tell says everything you need to know.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly my favorite part of the movie was space pirates, pirates on the moon.
Yeah.
Fuck me up. I loved that shit.
That was fun. I guess this kind of leads into like what another aspect of the movie I really enjoyed, and just how it envisioned the commercialization of space travel. Like, I loved that, like, it was Virgin Atlantic that was doing the commercial space flights to the moon. He's got that whole monologue about how, like, yeah, we got fucking subways on the moon and, like, Orange Julius's and whatnot. and it's just another tourist attraction. But also that we're still fighting over resources, even on other planets. Like, you still have national boundaries and space pirates on the moon.
Yeah, there's definitely a commentary on this society that is in some kind of future. It seems like a fake future. It's not like our world, like 20, like 100. It is. It seems kind of like a different world.
Yeah. Well, I like that they also didn't give an exact year. I think that's going to help the movie age pretty gracefully.
Yeah.
But I do like that it does feel like it's a lot more hard. It's a lot harder sci-fi than even like Blade Runner 2049. I think that most like futuristic films we get, where you don't have like the stylized spacesuits. They still look like just slightly sleeker versions of our classic astronaut suits. They're still using like moon rovers.
It's like normcore, like almost like normcore science fiction.
Yeah.
It's like, oh yeah, we got all like the same stuff. It's just like in the future kind of.
Yeah.
And we won't explain how certain things, like why, obviously when we have shuttles to the moon, I feel like they won't, well, maybe they will look like those. It felt very much like the commercialization was there, but the branding was not.
Yeah. I mean, the branding on the inside of the rocket was there.
Right. Yeah. I guess the branding of space travel itself and how it would be. I guess we always imagine in the future that it'll be very comfortable. It'll be more like flying in an airplane. And this makes it seem like, no, we're still pretty rudimentary. We still got the rovers. We still use space shuttles, etc.
That's kind of what I liked about it, though, is that they're rushing to this commercialization without having like the aesthetic nailed down. They're just like, oh yeah, people just want to go to space, and this is what
they want to get to the moon.
This is what the government set up, so like we're going to use it. Very, very, almost like brutalist, but
oh yeah, very, very, very brutalist. I like that. There's one other I'll call it a set piece, is the space baboon.
Oh yeah. So what an interesting sequence, because I want to know what was going through your head as they like boarded aliens. The ship. You
I thought yeah. I was like aliens.
I was in the same boat, because I know they were kind of teasing it. They're like, oh yeah, this the
Lima project. Lima.
I was gonna say lemur. I'm like, I know it's not a lemur project. The Lima project was all about finding extraterrestrial life out in space. So they kept on teasing that. I was like, oh, this is where we're going to get our first glimpse of aliens. And we're going to see Tommy Lee Jones is like made all the aliens his slaves. Like, we're going to go full Heart of Darkness in space.
Oh, yeah.
But no, it was fucking baboons.
Yeah. Terrifying. Like really jarring and just like, ooh, that, yeah, it's very fucked up.
Also,
especially that slow reveal.
The brutality of what they did to that captain's face. Like, his nose was gone. His fingers were gone. I'm like, oh, this is still PG-13? Interesting. That was pretty brutal.
Yeah.
I did love when he...
And that's even... No, go on. You.
I was just going to say... I loved when he depressurized the cabin and put the baboons in there.
Ooh,
I was like,
yeah.
Oh, I thought they were just going to like show them getting vacuumed out into space. But I'm like, oh, right. This is hard sci-fi. And they just exploded from depressurization.
Right. Which, that part of the movie... I'll get into like my kind of one big drawback for this movie, my one big criticism.
Mm-hmm.
But let's continue with some of the good things. I think the pacing with all these set pieces is very good. Like, the movie moves quickly and it's heavy. And part of like, you know, Apocalypse Now, I love Apocalypse Now, but it drags. Like, it's long. The pacing's a little wonky.
Yeah.
But that's part of the appeal.
That's just Francis Ford Coppola, you know. And that's not, I mean, I don't even know which cut you're talking about, but because there's like six cuts of that movie.
I'm talking Redux.
Okay, so like the good one.
Yeah, that's yeah.
And that's one that of the includes ones. The Frenchman,
French plantation.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Boy. Yeah, I don't think the pacing is that bad. I do think that, you know, Ad Astra is, because Ad Astra is only 2 hours.
Right, it moves. It moves pretty quickly, I think.
Yeah. I was kind of curious going, it felt like this is going to be, not to say this isn't a meditative film, but I did think that it was going to linger on certain set pieces or scenes a bit longer than it did. But yeah, I was pleasantly surprised with the momentum that it kept up throughout the film.
Yeah, and that's kind of a similar thing I felt about The Lost City of Z. Like, oh man, okay. This movie has the potential to be super long and boring.
Yeah, that's what I felt about it too. Just like the nature of the film and the story they're trying to tell.
Exactly. But no, it moves pretty quickly and there's always stuff going on. So I felt like that was maybe something that James Gray has really figured out how to do, is to pace a movie well. And then just the emotional arc of this movie, it really sets like a very clear arc, starting from one place and getting to the other. Like, everything is executed so well.
Yeah.
And with not that much nuance, but enough where it can take these kind of old ideas about toxic masculinity and, you know, kind of the men keeping all of their emotions guarded into themselves.
Yeah.
And kind of putting that under the microscope using space.
Yeah.
And the search because for extraterrestrials.
It allows you to isolate them.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I did really love too that that really got me at the one of the last lines when the last exchanges between Brad Pitt and Tommy Lee was, you know, Tommy Lee's talking about like, I we can't fail this mission. Like, we have to continue. We have to find, you know, the aliens out there. We can't be alone in the universe. And Brad Pitt's like, well, you didn't fail the mission. Like, we learned that we're all we have.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, okay, that hits pretty hard. Like, this
when he just like, it's like, no, I got to keep searching. I'm like,
yeah,
no, you figured it out.
Yeah.
You searched.
Yeah. You got your answer.
You didn't find it, man. Yeah. And it's like,
yeah. Like, oh, God.
He's still on the edge of fucking space. Oh, this completely fucking, alone.
This fucking movie, man.
Yeah. Really great. Everything really comes together. Well, and I think my only criticism is this movie is a big, like, what is science? Like, there's a lot of things that happen in this movie that are just like, wait, what? Like, him kind of riding the plate of steel through storm.
Through the asteroid belt?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's probably doable.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of things in this movie where you're like, probably doable.
Yeah.
And they never really say how they travel, but they're like, oh, it took like Voyager 12 years to get to Neptune, but this guy can get there in 79 days.
Future.
Which is long.
It's long, but yeah, it's definitely not years. You know, and they talk about how Earth is, you know, just a couple billion miles away from here. And then he's like, oh, I'll use the blast, the nuclear blast, this propellant. To get home.
Which, yeah, sure. Yeah, I guess. You know, like, I think there's a certain amount of space science that is overblown. Like, a lot of space science is math in a way. Like, it's inertia. Like, oh, you're going to go this way. You're going to keep traveling.
It's literally physics in a vacuum.
Yes. So it's, I assume, easier. I mean, you got to know, like, your basics. But I don't think you have to do, like, trigonometry or anything.
Yeah. Like, I think if you went through that rock field and you had the momentum from that like rotating satellite dish or whatever, and you didn't hit like a big enough rock, you'd probably be okay.
Yeah, and it was standing still too.
Yeah, he also had a jetpack, so he could have just kept on going.
He had one of those propulsion packs. Why didn't they just have him jetpack?
Yeah.
I do like how when he's stowing away on the ship and he's like climbing, so it's like you've got 10 minutes left and he's still underwater and he's like, I gotta go fast.
Yeah. That digging me like, oh, so you're climbing that just gave me that scene. I kind of wish that it played out a little longer because I'm like, this is a horrifying scenario to be like under the launch pad of a rocket ship. I feel like I get it. He's cool all the time. His BPM never gets above 80, but he is so fucking chill right now.
And I'm just like, yo, dude, do you not realize what's going down?
Yeah. Do you know how rockets work? Like, you've seen rocket launches before.
He's just super cool. And that whole that scene when he stows away on board the ship and immediately he's like, hey, guys, it's chill. Like, don't worry. I'm not here to hurt you. I'm just here to help you get there. I know you're all really incompetent, but and then they proceed to like, all right, we got to get him.
Yeah, they just needed him to be on that spaceship alone with his dad. They just had to get all these characters out of the way real fast.
Yeah, but they all die in, like, the worst ways. They all die horribly.
When the one girl, like, she smacks her face against the cabin because it dislodges mid-flight. Like, that was pretty brutal. I forget how
very brutal.
I don't remember how the Asian dude and the captain died, though.
Well, she shot like some kind of canister.
Oh, yeah. They suffocated. So
they suffocated.
I do. Okay. And, yeah.
Yeah, man. And then just like, yeah, when he's got the respirator up to their mouth, they're like, breathe, just breathe. And he's, God damn it.
Like, he's already dead, dude.
And he's like, well, I guess it's just me.
Also, I love how incompetent that captain was, too. That, like, the captain, he knew Brad Pitt saved the ship once already.
Yeah. Oh, and that landing sequence, great. I really like that.
Yeah.
And he's like, I think you know why I did what I did. And don't worry, I won't tell.
Yeah.
I won't tell Spacecom. Best advertisement for the Space Force is this movie.
I'm so glad it wasn't actually called Space Force, though. I would have laughed. I wouldn't have been able to stop laughing if it was called Space Force. Thank God it was at least called Space Command.
People in my theater like whispered like Space Force.
Space Force. Space Force. Yeah, I mean, they got their merch already for Space Force.
Yeah, Space Force. Hell yeah. I really enjoyed this movie. I enjoyed pretty much everything about it. I would definitely see it again in a heartbeat. I would recommend anybody see this in the theater. I think it's a pretty good theater experience. I would definitely recommend.
Yeah, I agree. But I feel that way about every space movie. I think if you're going to go for like the scale, like the vastness and loneliness of space, I think is best experienced in a theater where you have this giant screen that is, you know, 20 times bigger than you.
And you know you're gonna have like cool set pieces, like interesting visual effects, and then like loud sounds. So you need like those speakers.
Yeah.
You need to hear like
loud baboon
those
screams.
Rocket ships. Yeah, jeez.
Yeah. Tommy Lee Jones's grumbly voice.
Yeah, the weird. Like I felt like he was not in the movie at all.
Yeah, barely.
But he was great. Like he really shows up for it.
Good looking beard.
Yeah. Yeah. I did like how they assumed that they let their beard grow, but like not for that long.
Yeah.
Like
he was still, trimming it. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause he comes in after like
he probably
6 months.
Yeah. He cut his beard before the last mutiny.
He looks, It's like, it looks like it's been exactly like 2 months.
Yeah. I did like though how in the space travel sequence when he was going into stasis, like he would actually like he would have to plug in his own fucking feeding tube. And then
the feeding tube.
And then
was
they had the
yeah.
muscle contractors, like the electric muscle contractors that he had to have going all the time so he didn't fucking atrophy on the way to Neptune.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, God. Oh, I actually did put thought into like you don't just step into a pod and go to sleep. Like
that would have been awful.
Yeah. Yeah, we need to figure out how to do long term space travel.
There was a fire truck that just went by my apartment loudly.
I heard it.
Leave it in. Leave that in.
We don't edit this podcast at all. This is coming to you raw and uncensored.
Right. We're technically always transmitting live, but we only record like an hour
exactly.
every week.
Yeah. You're getting the real world here.
Yeah, you're getting the tame stuff. You're
Boys
getting
and girls,
the
yeah.
the compilation.
You're getting the TV-14 version.
Yeah, hell yeah. All right. Well, I don't have anything else to say this movie besides see it. It's so fucking good.
Yeah.
One of my favorites of the year.
Absolutely. Get Brad Pitt his money back. He deserves a return on this investment.
Yeah. Keep rewarding James Gray, who's making movies that don't make any money.
Yeah. But God, I wonder how long he can go or like how long before he sells out and just directs like a Marvel movie.
Hopefully never.
Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah. What are we going to see next week, Rob? Have we decided yet?
I don't think so, because there's like nothing coming out next week.
There is. Yeah, there is. There's Abominable, that animated movie. There's The Day Shall Come, which is a movie I've never heard of. It's released by IFC. And then there's Judy, the Judy Garland biopic.
No, what we're going to see instead is The Death of Dick Long.
What is that?
So, this is a movie from the half of the directors of Swiss Army Man.
Oh,
Yeah. Apparently, it's great. I was reading it's an A24 film. It's about the death of Dick Long. The tagline is "Dick is dead."
Cool.
I don't actually know
nobody,
much.
Nobody can be named Dick anymore, right? Like, do you think there had to have been a point when being named Richard and being called Dick, like? That's a thing that happened.
No, people are still
people are super chill about it.
The only people that are still named Richard and or Dick are people whose parents are upset that they were born.
No, I think it had to have been an old name, you know, like when Nixon was born and they started calling him Dick. Like, I don't think people associated it with like the male genitalia.
Yeah. So I wonder when did Dick become like the male genitalia? Like, when did that become a slur for penis?
Men. Yeah. I don't know. I'll look up the etymology later.
Yeah.
But until then, I guess we'll see whatever the fuck this movie is. Yeah. When I present my book report on the etymology of the the different slang for male genitalia.
Yeah. Schlong. Dong.
All right. I'll stop you there. We'll be here for hours. I have to eat someday. Yeah. Well, all right. All right, you nuts. Yeah. We'll see you next week when we talk about this Dick movie or whatever. Yeah, we talk about the
death of Dick Long and the etymology of dicks. Follow the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
At Viewing Angles on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter at Robert Jr. JR. Follow me on Letterboxd, too. How do I follow you, Dan?
I'm at the Dan Leo Show, or D Leo, on Letterboxd. My Letterboxd stuff is great. I'm always reviewing stuff.
Yeah, I wish I could review your reviews.
Yeah, they would be two sentences long.
Exactly. Yeah, one word reviews. Yeah,
that's my dumb gimmick that I feel like I should give up at some point. Maybe I'll move to two sentences in the future.
No, hang on to that gimmick. Nobody else is doing it.
Yeah, nobody else is even trying.
Exactly.
Right. It's like a tweet, but with way more semicolons. Well, all right. Until next week, nuts. It's been real.
Bye.